and welcome back to the Common Connected podcast. I'm your host, Janine Halloran, and today I'm so excited because on this podcast, I get a chance to talk to one of my good colleagues, Natasha Daniels. Natasha Daniels is a child anxiety and OCD therapist and a mom to three kids who are dealing with anxiety and OCD. She is the author of several books, some of my favorites, including Anxiety Sucks, How to Parent Your Anxious Child, Social Skills Activities for Kids, and It's Brave to Be Kind. She is also the creator of AT Parenting Survival School, the YouTube channel Ask the Child Therapist, and the host of the AT Parenting Survival podcast. She offers parents worldwide resources on how to help kids with anxiety or OCD through her online AT Parenting Survival School. I'm so excited that I got a chance to talk with her. I always enjoy our conversations and we share lots of good tips and tricks and ideas to really focus on helping our students, our children, our teens with OCD. So take a listen. Natasha Daniels, I am so excited to have you on my podcast finally. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So I just want to take a moment for those of you who are not familiar with Natasha's work, if you could just give us a quick overview of what you do, that'd be great.
Yeah, I provide resources for parents who are raising kids with anxiety or OCD. So I'm a child therapist like you. And I have three kids with anxiety and OCD, so I get it from all different levels.
Yes, absolutely. Your book, Anxiety Sucks, is a book that I recommend all the time to kids and teens, actually. And they're always like, the book title is Anxiety Sucks? I'm like, yes, because it does.
This is funny. I did that on purpose because I wanted to be a book that, you know, teens would kind of do a double take on and be like, well, I'll look through it. You know, it's like, the title's okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. You know, people will say, like, I have that teen book, the Coping Skills for Teens book, and parents will be like, well, they flipped through it a little bit and they picked it up. I'm like, that is a win in my book. If they just at least like paused for a second to think about it, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. Open the door.
Open the door. So whenever people reach out to me and they are looking for help on OCD, you are the person that I always reach out to, the person I point them to, the YouTube videos that I point them to, because you have such incredible resources and advice around OCD. So for people who may not be as familiar, can you explain a little bit more about what that is and how it looks when we see it in our children and our teens?
Yeah. And I do want to preface that Anxiety Sucks is not for OCD. So, If you have OCD and you read Anxiety Sucks, it can actually make OCD worse. So it was always on my like back burner to write OCD Sucks, but I never got to it. So I don't even know if that'll ever happen. So OCD is different. And that's kind of a good segue as far as why that matters. Because I think sometimes people think that they're very similar and they are on some level, but OCD is about having an intrusive thought or feeling, and I always add the feeling because I think that's the one that gets missed, and the need to do or avoid something to get some brief relief. And that component, that second part of it, is the part that anxiety doesn't often have, which is the compulsive part. And avoidance can be a compulsion in OCD, but it looks different than anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And you know, it's really confusing, I think, to people who don't really even understand that there is that like tweak of a difference, because I think sometimes they get sort of lumped together a lot of times, unfortunately, and it really is like something sort of a little bit separate. Like we have to look at it differently, treat it differently. What does it look like when we are looking at OCD in a child or in a teenager, what does that look like in real life? Like, what is a parent seeing in their home? What is a person at the school seeing? What does that look like?
Well, it can look different, but there's a framework that looks similar. And because there are so many different themes that can pop up with OCD, it can look drastically different, but the framework is the same. So I'll give you some really concrete examples, but it's not all exhaustive because it can show up in so many different ways. But you can have a child who has an intrusive thought or feeling. So, and we have, you know, catchy names for all of these things because we put them in categories, but, you know, I always kind of equate it to ice cream. Like there's a million flavors, but they're all very similar. They're all cold, you know, and they all melt. And the same thing with OCD themes, kids can have multiple ones, they can change over time, but we do give them little names so that we can kind of categorize them. So if I have a child who has moral OCD, I like to use that one the most when I give it, when I'm talking about it, because I find that that's a really common one in childhood. And it's the one that's often missed. So we all know about germs. We all know about symmetry, you know, just right and checking. We all know, most of us know about that kind of stuff, but you can have a child who has an intrusive thought. I'm a bad person. You know, maybe I stole something 2 weeks ago, or maybe, you know, I call my friend fat in my head. So that means I'm a bad person. And these aren't just like fleeting thoughts that you might have, you know, just a moral dilemma. Am I a good person or a bad person? It's an intrusive thought that's being bombarded. And then the child has a compulsion. I need to get this off of my chest. And so they confess. A lot of times the confessional aspect is the compulsion. And so they might come home and they say, Mom, I think 2 weeks ago I stole a pack of gum from my friend's purse or whatever. Or, you know, when I was four, I think I lied to you. And so the parent starts to see these confessional things. And no matter how much they say, oh, honey, don't worry about it, it doesn't satiate the OCD. And that's the difference too, with anxiety or with a typical developmental issue, is it doesn't satiate the child. So that's one example. You might have a child who has, I'm trying to think of some other examples. You know, they might think that certain things are contaminated. And right now with COVID, we're having an increase in that kind of theme where, you know, maybe something's contaminated because I feel like there's germs on it, or maybe I feel like it's contaminated because a bad person touched it. Or maybe it's contaminated because I had a bad thought when I touched it. So contamination is not just about germs, or maybe I'm going to get you sick. So harm OCD is the worry of I might get you sick. And so sometimes we assume, oh, they don't want to touch a doorknob, or, you know, they're touching everything with their elbows because they're worried about germs, but it could be all of those other things. So a parent might notice some odd behaviors in general, you know, with any theme. It's just something that can seem nonsensical or can be avoidant. Like, why don't they get the remote? You know, why do they always ask me to do it? Or why do they ask me to wash my hands before I make a sandwich for them? Or I notice that they won't open the door to the garage and I have to open it for them. So you're seeing some behavior that maybe doesn't make sense, or you're hearing questions that they're asking over and over again that seem like they don't make sense. So those are some of the things to look for.
Yeah, absolutely. That is really helpful to give those concrete examples, because I think it's one of those things where it's often, I think, overused in society when people are like, oh, I'm so OCD, or I'm like, well, that's not quite actually accurate. Like, you're not clinically diagnosed with OCD. And if you were, you really wouldn't be joking about it like that. Right. Because it's very significantly impairing. Mm-hmm. When you have to do things in a certain way, or you have these thoughts are very intrusive and really hard to ignore and move past and get rid of. Like, there is no getting rid of necessarily without some sort of intervention or support sometimes for families. Right. So
you can't rationalize it. And I think that's the other thing that even clinicians sometimes don't understand, is that you can't rationalize your way out of it, because intellectually, most people know that it doesn't make sense. They get it. It's a disconnect, but it doesn't reduce the OCD.
Right. It doesn't make it stop just because you have talked through it. It's different than anxiety, because you can right. like sort of talk it through. Yes. And like, you can get back up to that, like, and we're going down the spiral again. But there is a piece of that where it's like, oh, I understand that. And I can do some thinking around that and maybe change behaviors around that. It's very different. It's fascinating. And it's something that we need to keep in mind when you are working or you have a child who is dealing with OCD. If parents are starting to see some of those behaviors that you had mentioned earlier, they're starting to see some of those, like the moral OCD you mentioned, or if they're noticing like things about being ill and not wanting to touch things, when does it cross the line? When is it something where people should seek more help versus I'm struggling a little bit because there's a lot of germs around and we're very concerned about COVID and we're concerned and we have masks mandates and things like that. So where do parents know when it's time to actually reach out and seek some help?
Well, I think those are like two questions. Cause like, there is a, there's a natural instinct to be a little bit more concerned with germs. And so, you know, where does that go over the line and start to turn into OCD? Because now I was joking with my daughter the other day. I'm like, the behavior that I do, like, would have concerned me in the past. When I get gas, I always like use hand sanitizer. I didn't do that before. You know, like I'm always aware I hand sanitize every time I come out of a store. Yep. I probably would have seen that as a little bit of a clinical thing in the past, maybe for me, but now that's normal. So it goes farther. OCD is never satisfied. So now that we're all doing things like that, it's going above and beyond. So I have kids that I was working with where, you know, they're wearing a mask in their house, or they can't be around anyone else, or they're washing their hands multiple times a day in their house because something from school touched something else from home that touched something else from home. And so now they're constantly rewashing everything. So it's the extreme. So that's one to answer your question on that end. And then if you're seeing these things and you think, I definitely think that's OCD, whatever it may be, I kind of equate OCD to termites. Like a little bit of termites is still not an okay thing. I found a little bit of termites in my bathroom, you know, this year. It freaked me out. I'm like, I don't want one termite, you know, like they're not allowed in my house because I feel like they're going to wreck my foundation. It's the same thing with OCD. OCD to me is very different than anxiety in that it is, you know, it's been listed as one of the most debilitating diseases, you know, along with other big stuff like, you know, cancer. And so I take it very seriously. So if you see even just a little bit, it's one of those things that I wouldn't wait and see, because when you're proactive, there are little weeds, those neural pathways are just developing. You want to nip it in the bud, and it's counterintuitive. As a parent, you're not going to necessarily know how to approach it versus anxiety. Anxiety, you know, you can wing it and you can, it's pretty intuitive. OCD, really not at all. And so getting some support, I think even just to learn about how to approach those things, or get assessment is, I think, really key.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And I love your idea of like the termites there. It's one of those things, like if you can get it early, if you can sort of get the strategies that you need, which are maybe a little bit different than what you have needed, or maybe what you would have thought that they would be. If you can get it early, oh my gosh, what a world of difference that makes, because it can be lifelong. I mean, it can really be lifelong and super impactful in just activities of daily living, like just getting up and getting ready and getting out the door. That's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
I think the other problem is that what you think you need to do as a parent is generally completely opposite. So I've had so many parents say to me, oh my gosh, this entire time I've been doing everything that's actually been growing the OCD. It's not their fault. It's just, it's completely counterintuitive.
Yeah. So could you speak a little bit more about that? Like, what are the strategies that are your go-to strategies for dealing with OCD? And like, what are those things that you've noted where you've had to sort of like tell parents, actually, I know what felt like that maybe made the most sense, but it's actually like the complete opposite. What are those things that you would say to a family?
Everything that you think you should do in your maternal or paternal gut is wrong. You know, so reassurance, that becomes a compulsion. So when you tell your child, don't worry, that's not dirty. Or when you swoop in and you do something for them and you clean it off, like you logically try to approach the issue by problem solving in the normal way, that will make it worse. The way that we approach OCD, which can seem harsh if you don't understand the research behind it, is by doing ERP, exposure with response prevention, which is getting your child to sit with the discomfort so that they can build those muscles and be able to tolerate it. And so that looks really hard. So when my daughter who has emetophobia, the fear of throw up, says, Mom, am I going to throw up today? Tell me I'm not going to throw up today. The maternal instinct in me is to say, honey, you're going to be fine. Don't worry about it. It's just your anxiety. But because it's OCD, I say, you may or may not throw up, but I know that you can handle it no matter what. So still supportive, still validating, but I'm getting her to sit in the discomfort, which can be very counterintuitive.
And hard, so hard for parents because you're sitting there and you're like, your gut instinct, you're like everything that you've been like sort of doing as a parent is to comfort and reassure, and you just have to change your language around it and change your thinking around it. It's very tricky. So like, it's one of those things I always say, it's like, it's easy to say, it's like, it's simple to say, it's not easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, I've got three kids with these issues, and it goes against everything in my body. But I see them get better, you know, and I see them also not wanting me to do things that will actually grow their OCD as they get better. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel when you start to see, oh my gosh, this is actually helping. Then it feels good.
Yeah. It's incredible. It's in, you know, that's one of the things I think that we both enjoy about our jobs, working with families and working with kids, is to see that growth, to see that they are making a change and knowing that it makes their lives better and more manageable, which is what we want them to be able to do. And even if it goes against our maternal instincts.
Yeah. Long-term, I want all the kids that I work with, and I want my own kids to be successful. I want them to be healthy, well-adapted adults. And that's the way to do it. So.
Absolutely. I am so excited because you have so many resources for families. And I love that you have courses, and I've talked a little bit about your courses before, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about what you've got going on at AT Parenting Survival School.
I've been adding to my library. So I have, I've just basically been taking everything that I teach in my therapy. I'm very big about empowering parents to help their kids directly. Because I know that for myself that has helped. And so I've made courses that are like literally verbatim what I tell parents in my therapy sessions. And so I have how to teach kids to crush anxiety, how to teach kids how to crush OCD, how to teach kids to crush social anxiety. Actually, the social anxiety one is directly for people with social anxiety and adults with social anxiety, how to handle difficult behavior, how to handle struggles with sleep. And I also just recently did one on the SPACE program, which is a parent-only approach to anxiety and OCD if your child's not ready yet to work on that.
Wow, you have so many things. The last time I checked, you definitely had like OCD and anxiety. And that's so incredible that you are just putting it out there for families to be able to support themselves. And I think that's incredible. It's one of those things, as a therapist, you sit with a client and maybe like once a week or once every other week. It's not enough. There needs to be some carryover, and there needs to be some way that parents are able to do this work at home themselves, because they're the ones who are there with the kid day in and day out dealing with these things. So I think it's incredible that you're offering that out. And that's incredible. So people can find that. What's the URL for that one?
It's atparentingsurvivalschool.com.
Awesome. Fantastic. So before we wrap up, I always like to ask every single guest, what is one way or what are several ways that you like to rest and recharge?
Well, I have a lot of them because since my husband died, like that has been my number one goal this year. I walk in the desert every day. So that has been just connecting with nature, I think has been very, like, very helpful. I float in a salt tank. So I do that. I actually do that every week, which is a little like indulgent, but it's good. Like that salt is really good for your body, but it's really good for your back and it's really good for your soul. So it's like a three-parter.
That is incredible. I've never heard of having that weekly. That's awesome.
It's a membership. So yeah, but I have the highest membership because it is so helpful. And I like can't, you know, just shutting that brain off when you go into that like clammy, it's like a clam, you know, so like, I don't know if you've ever seen a salt tank, but it's like a sensory deprivation tank basically. Yep. And you know, they also play like these vibrations. So you're getting like sound therapy because the vibrations go through the water as well. So it's just hitting me on all levels. And it's the one gift I give myself. Well, I give myself a couple of gifts, but that is one of them each week.
Yeah. And I'm so thankful that you do that. And what a great model for your family to say, I am taking the time every week. This is how I am recharging myself, how I'm re-energizing myself so I can be here for you and be here for the community that I'm creating. So I think that's phenomenal. I'm so excited for you that you do that.
Yeah. And you know, our kids do need to see us modeling that. I think sometimes we think that, you know, we don't want to be selfish, but then we're not teaching our kids to have self-care, self-love, self-compassion. I actually have a whiteboard, and We write down what we're doing each day. And I write it down, even though it's in the middle of the day when they're not here, I write it down because I want them to see. I write, mom's having therapy today, or mom's going to salt tank today. So they can see that even as adults, we take care of ourselves.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing that a gift that we can give our kids to know that it actually does matter that we care about ourselves. And we do it. We walk the walk, we talk the talk, and we're doing it. And we're walking through and saying, this is important. This is how it's going to make it easier for me to do the things that I need to do. And I always think about, like, what do I want my kids to do when they are adults, when they are parents? Mm-hmm. I want them to still take care of themselves like they do now.
Right.
I love that. I should actually write it down so they can see it too. I tell them all the time, like, I'm going for a walk, you know, but
write on that whiteboard. I'm going for a walk. Self time. My kids even know, you know, they can't go on that walk with me because I can't, like, it's my time to download and, you know, be on my own. And they know that's my self care.
Absolutely. I love that. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for being on the podcast. I've really enjoyed our conversation. And if people want to find you, they can go over to atparentingsurvivalschool.com. And they should also check out your YouTube. I'll link to that in the show notes because it's phenomenal. I always send people there. It's such an incredible resource. So
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.